Spotlight. I'm Chrissy Bosniak. I am really excited to welcome back our guest. She's a top Canadian ag media personality, podcast host, award-winning speaker, and also the CEO of Farm Marketer and Cottage Marketer. Whenever I feel really busy, I think about this, this lady because she's definitely busier than me. And she's also a farmer. She's one of the most passionate, disciplined, and driven people that I've ever known. And she's on fire and deeply passionate about empowering people to succeed, whether it's motivating individuals to live their best life, or helping business owners and farmers, clients navigate this often overwhelming business world, and not even just business world, just the world. We're going to discuss her podcast, which she recently rebranded a bit. And I want to hear what she's learned over the last 3 months since she's decided to shift gears a bit. I would like to welcome my dear friend, Tracy Brunette. Welcome, Tracy, and thank you so much for being here.
Ah, Chrissy, it is so nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation. And the feeling is mutual. You inspire me and everything right back at you. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, one of those friendships that was just destined to be. We ended up just sitting together at a conference and we're like, I think she's my friend.
Yeah. And ever since then, it was amazing. I love when those things happen. Yes, destiny.
Definitely. Yeah. So first of all, let's talk about your podcast, kind of give an overview of what you do, your life, your background, and then why you did this Freshen Up and the slightly new trajectory.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Going back a little bit, I was hired to launch Farm Marketer just about 16 years ago in April. So big anniversary coming up. And a group of investors had the idea for our platform. This is our very origin story that I don't normally share. So I was hired to take a seed of an idea to create a website with properties for sale across Canada, news, weather, commodities, all that good stuff. Partway in, the owners were amazing. They let me buy part ownership. And then recently in 2019, I bought them out and I am the sole owner of Farm Marketer, Cottage Marketer, and the Impact Farming brands. So that is our origin story. I love it because I love our platforms and what we do. My background and my jam is really agriculture, business, entrepreneurship, and empowering people to have personal power, financial freedom, time freedom. So when it was about 6 years ago, we were redoing our whole platform. So our website would have been 10 years old, Chrissy. And as we know, 10 years in the tech world ages you. So we had to do a real big, expensive rebrand of the website, back end, all of that kind of stuff. And we were looking at the media space. And at that point, we had properties for sale, news, weather, commodities, links, all of that kind of good stuff. And then I really thought, okay, we're redoing this. We're 10 years in. We need to grow. What does Farm Marketer 2.0 stand for? How are we going to serve Canadian farmers? And me being a big podcast and video watcher, I said, you know what? Our industry needs a podcast so that farmers can listen on the go. And I kind of looked around to see what was being done. Again, I like to operate with blinders on and do my thing and what I'm good at and stay in my lane, so to speak. You know, the good old racehorse analogy, put the blinders on and go. But you kind of look around and you go, okay, I don't need to compete. How can I complement with what is out there while tapping into my strength? So I looked at that and I said, well, we have large, aggressively growing farmers coming to our land to buy, or to our website to buy more land. They're looking for information. Okay, well, those big farmers are savvy businessmen and ladies. Why don't I put together a podcast video show to bring them the people and ideas that'll impact their farming operation? So it wasn't like born overnight, but you know how that works, Chrissy? It's kind of like, ooh, an idea. Okay, wait a minute. And then you go this way and then you bump against it and it's like wrong. And then you go this way. So I kind of finally landed on business content, mental health, and a little bit of the ag tech. I don't do that as much. I've really stayed in that farmer mental health and farmer business. And then again, just giving farmers those gold nugget ideas from the guests that I interview, the top people in the industry, to say, here, you should incorporate your farm. Here, remember, we need to be transition planning. Here, if you're struggling mentally, here's some things to do. We all know farming is stressful. So our podcast was 6 years old in August, starting into our sixth season. And here we are.
Amazing. And then tell me about your farm as well, because you and your husband also have a farm in yes. Manitoba, Canada.
We are Southeast Manitoba. We started our farm together, Anthony and I, from ground zero, farming with but separate from his parents. So we bought all our own land, our animals, our equipment, slowly over time while working with them but separate from them. So, oh my goodness, we've been farming, I'd say, about that same timeline, just shortly around when I started at Farm Marketer. Anthony started out farming part-time, bought our first group of animals, and now we are about 270 to 300 head of mainly Black Angus, but commercial. We start off commercial, and then slowly over the years, we've been replacing everything with Black Angus. So we're in Southeast Manitoba. Absolutely love the farming, and I'm so thankful I get to explore and be part of the industry from several aspects. The boots on the ground when I can. Obviously, farmer Anthony's the main farmer. I help in the evenings and weekends when I can. But to be a farmer, I mean, I'm financially, mentally, physically invested in farming. So I love that I can bring that too. Just like you, you've been around animals, you have that farming background. Everything we bring helps us bring on those guests and then really pick their brain being in the farmer's seat as well, right? I know a few years back when the drought was first hitting, it was interesting. I mean, a lot of farmers were struggling financially, mentally. There was a lot of not so fun stuff going on. And I mean, that's continued over the years, but it was neat because I'm like, you know what? Obviously, we're being affected by this. I get it. To me, it seems a little bit trite, misplaced, wrong tone to be talking about transition planning when there's farmers that even don't even know if they're going to make the bills for the year, right? How are they going to survive, let alone try and pass this thing on to the next generation? So it was really needed. Just bringing in that boots on the ground. I'm a farmer. I get it. And how can we serve farmers through Farm Marketer and the Impact Farming Show? So I like that. Yeah. I have our farm and my media company.
And that's it exactly. I know I was on your show, I think it was back in December, I think. And one of ladies in American Agri Women, she's now the president, she called me afterwards and said, hey, that interview was really good. And it felt like that woman interviewing you knew my life. And I thought that was so cool because you do come to the table with the knowledge of, you know, a cattle rancher. And it was really cool to hear how you could impact farming, right? Impact somebody's life by what you do. And, and so I think that's really cool. And so I know we were talking back in the fall and you were thinking about switching things up a little bit and trying out, you know, a different trajectory. So can you tell me about that kind of that journey?
Excellent. So for 5 seasons of the show, I've really done the business, the mental health, a little bit of ag tech, like I mentioned. And to me personally and professionally, I'm always paying attention to what's going on out in the world. We have to, right? And politically, but also what's not being covered in mainstream media. There's a lot of stuff going on that I think is important for farmers to hear about, that if it's not being covered mainstream media and nobody else is taking the opportunity to cover it and try and do an unbiased look at why is this happening? Like, for example, the farmer protests in Europe. I'm sitting there going, okay, mainstream media is not covering it. Okay. Nobody else is covering it. I'm like, well, Tracy, you have a media company. You have a podcast show. There's amazing people out there that have boots on the ground out in Europe, and they know why this is happening. And then you might have somebody going, well, Tracy, that's in Europe. We don't care. And there's a lot of that, right? But the thing is, a lot of the things that are happening and starting to be dropped here or inching to our awareness in North America are already things that are long happening over there. So I decided to just use my platform to cover a lot of stuff to do with policy and with property rights and the conservation and green movement, because I don't think there's a farmer out there that doesn't realize that things have been changing the last couple of years. And to me, again, we can be in our silos in our industry and hearing, following the same people, but I've been outside of the egg industry. And there seems, in my opinion, shared by quite a few people, there seems to be a spotlight on farmers and agriculture and helping farmers farm better. And of course, we all want to farm better. Nobody cares for the land more than a farmer, obviously, because we just love the land. That's our heritage. That's our livelihood. And if you look at it, it's in our best interest to take care of the land. If you abuse the land, overgraze it, overwork it, it doesn't produce, and we need to feed the world's population. So the original, in my opinion, the original environmentalist is the farmer. So long story short, Chrissy, that's where I decided to go. And then I just kind of came out of the gate in January 2024 and just said, okay, we're going to do a few spicy interviews here and just come out of the gate, guns a-blazing, from business content here to let's talk about some heated areas that people might not like. But you know what? Honestly, at the end of the day, to me, I'm here to serve our industry and make sure that us as farmers are taken care of, our freedoms, our rights, our property rights, and our ability to continue to farm. Though that is what's important for me, not being popular and talking about the latest and greatest hot topic. I mean, that's great, obviously, but I think there's important things we need to be talking about as an industry and aware of, because it's inching in from a few different directions, and it's not always easy to catch what's going on.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And I know that's what, you know, in our personal conversations, we talk a lot about what's going on and how can we use our platforms to try to get the word out and not to influence anybody. Yeah. And I know you feel exactly the same way. It's just, we can ask questions and then people can decide. Like, I don't agree with every person that comes on the show, of course, there's probably nobody I agree with 100% anyway in the world. And we can use this platform to just ask these questions. And I think that's so healthy. You know, yes. We need more talking these days. We need more dialogue. We need more sitting on the couch with coffee and just like talking with our friends and our family and try to get rid of some of these divisions, right?
Yeah. You know, and isn't that the job of a journalist? And I actually don't consider myself a journalist. I guess I am. I call myself a podcaster, vlogger, whatever it is. But I own a media company. And the original role, and this is being a little bit spicy, but the original role of a journalist was to dig into a story, present the facts, and let the audience decide.
Right.
Somewhere
along the way that got lost, right?
Yeah. And I think that's a safe statement. I mean, we can look at a lot of media and we know who's paying the bills, right? Because then it gets a little bit slanted that way. And that's a dangerous thing. So,
yeah. And that's something, you know, like podcaster talk, you know, and I know we've talked about this before, is that you have to be so careful of the dollars not driving you.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I have lots of emails where I said, I'm sorry, I can't represent that. You know, it just doesn't sit right with me. There's a lot of people that can't do that, you know, that can't just say, you know, these are my, I can't be bought. Because you're right, the mainstream media, I think that's a big part of the problem, right?
Sponsorship dollars. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Bite the hand that feeds you, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I went on a long road trip for a couple of weeks. And so I binge listened to Tracy's podcast, and I was so excited to hear to kind of see that this deep dive you were doing. And you had people like Margaret Byfield from American Stewards of Liberty, who's just an amazing human being. You had Trent Luce, you had Damian Mason, you had all of these you know, our audience knows all of those people and knows how powerful their voices are. So what I want to know is, what did you personally learn from each of them? And what topics did you come away going, yeah, that is a big issue?
You know, there's that group and there's quite a few others as well. And I purposely started off the series with Jake Legee towards
the top of it.
I'm going to touch on that one because both of us were going out on a limb with the very flashy statement, which is his speech title, Don't Tell Farmers How to Farm. And I'm going to start with that because whether or not we're on Twitter as farmers and we share our feelings about politics, our concerns, our disheartened feeling about being hated on by the urban population, there's a lot shared on Twitter and social media and a lot of back and forth. But to be honest, I think a lot of our true feelings are hidden. Our true concerns are hidden. And I put that episode out with Jake kind of to make that statement, don't tell farmers how to farm. And it resonated extremely well because there's a lot of farmers that are stressed out seeing this green movement, the climate movement, conservation movements, all of these things that are in mainstream that are being pushed, cheerleaded. And I'm not saying they're bad, but the part is there's a disconnect. The people that actually work the land and do the stuff on a daily basis that get it aren't the ones in the room where the decision is being made. And I've been that person that is both people in that room with people talking about farmers not wanting to pay carbon tax and a lot of not so great things and out of touch comments on the farming industry. And I'm sitting there going, oh my goodness, this isn't even true. And these are the people driving the decisions behind our livelihood as farmers. So actually, that would have been one of the meetings that really fired me up. And I said, I don't care if I take slack for talking about stuff that is taboo. I'm going to put it out here because farmers need to be represented. And not that I'm the voice of farmers by any means, but I needed to start these topics so other farmers know they're not alone and we can talk together and start a dialogue, maybe also representing ourselves. So, of course, there was Jake, there was Damien talking about the climate movement and the dangers there. There was Margaret about the land grab. There was Trent Lewis about freedom and farming. There was, oh my goodness, I should have my list in front of them. But there was so many great guests and they highlighted concerns in, I'd say, a handful of different areas. Sarah Fallon, I just interviewed her about balancing conservation and property rights. So as an opening statement, that's really where I wanted to go, why I interviewed these guests. I think it's hit home. And I think there's more people that have listened to the show that are just quietly nodding and saying, thank you, because I've got messages from them. It's good to know that you're not alone when the mass of the media and the world saying this and you're the person on the land and you get it and you're going, that's not true, right? So it's very isolating and it's a stress that farmers don't need. I digress. I have a handful of items I've summarized that I've learned from these. Do you want me to share those?
Yes, please.
Okay. So if we want to call it, and I know Damien has his presentation, Threats to Agriculture, that's kind of really where I focused. Of course, I think let's start the conversation. As always, there's so much opportunity in the world, right? There are a lot of opportunities out there. If you have the glass half full versus half empty, you're going to find those opportunities. So I wanted to say that because sometimes just due to the nature of this, right? It's like focusing on the threats all the time, the dangers, the negative, the realistic stuff, the boots on the ground. So to me, opportunities there, agriculture is amazing. People are always going to need to eat. Some of the concerns that these guests have shared, and it would be from their personal work and really coverage that they've been doing. So policy, I don't think there's many people out there that don't realize that agriculture and our future is largely in the hands of politicians. And of course, we've always had to be regulated and different things in our industry. We just haven't roamed free how we want to. But I don't think it is a far stretch to say that policy, government, and their concerns and what they're going to want from us is going to be one of our greatest risks going forward as farmers for, I'd say, the next year, 2 years, 10 years, forever and ever. It just seems to be a great political interest in farming.
Yeah, that's definitely something I've learned over the last, well, since I started the podcast. You kind of are like, wow.
Yeah.
Who's really in control here? And it is, it's policy that is driving so much of this.
Well, and if you look at it, I mean, it's as simple as carbon taxes here in Canada, and they're going up again. I mean, right.
And can you explain that? Because that's not here in the U.S. So, you know, so give a little overview of that. Sorry.
I seen a meme, actually. It was quite funny and sassy, but it said, come April 1st, Canada is going to have another 23% hike in our carbon tax. Whereas everybody on the same body of land, North America, nobody else has this. So it was a bit sassy, because take that as you might, but needless to say, in Canada here, that is being added to our cost of producing our product, right? So where we have fluctuating commodity prices, we're now being squeezed even more and excessively with the carbon tax. And yeah, there you are.
Yeah. And where does the money go? That's the thing, right? When you think about it, what's it doing to carbon? This money is getting raked in.
I imagine it's a carbon tax. So I'm going to assume that it goes against programs to help the environment and make a difference in the environment. I'm assuming that's where it goes. I'll leave it at that. Anyways, so very simply, policy, I think, is going to impact our farming operations like never before. We have taxes. We have the green movement that is just worldwide and picking up steam. All of a sudden, I would say post-pandemic, we really got into the green movement and the climate movement and environmentalism, and that's really what's being pushed. And of course, the farming industry seems to get that good old bullseye on it. So I think we're going to be pressured a lot, as we are, because of that movement, and it's being really pushed to the urban population. And the narrative is farmers need to do better. So I think we're going to have some added regulation down the line. I mean, I'm not a forecaster, I'm not going to guess, but if we look as simple as a few years back, they were dropping the idea of a 30% reduction in nitrous oxide for Canadian farmers. I can't remember if that was US, but if we look at that, that is policy that has been experienced over in Europe. And if we see the European farmers rioting, I mean, that was a great episode I did with Bill Wirtz, and he talked all about why they're rioting, the green agenda, farms being shut down over there because they're country has committed to decreasing their, what would you call it, their environmental footprint. So they needed to have 700 farms bought out by the government in the Netherlands. And if you follow that, watch the episode, but just different things like that. And heaven forbid that we actually see that here in North America. I sure hope not. But it has started with things like the reduction in nitrous oxide and the farm to fork strategy. Jake Legee talks about that a little bit. So when I'm covering things that are out in Europe, there's a reason I'm doing it, because they've chatted about those things here. The European farming countries have been doing the farm to fork strategy, been heavily regulated for much longer than us. It is of importance, I think, to look over there and go, why? I don't think these farmers want to take out their expensive machinery at the price of fuel that we have, take time away from their operations to go in the streets and riot. I mean, generally, that's not we can't stereotype farmers, but who really wants to do that? You're pushed to the max. And those are farmers in the Netherlands, anyways, that are being forced off their land by the government. That's like if somebody, and I don't think it's covered here enough, but that's like if somebody came to Anthony and I and said, okay, you're in this area and the Manitoba government has decided we need to decrease our environmental footprint. So you've been selected as one farm that needs to sell. Here's your offer, go away. And Bill in our episode was talking about the episode European Farmer Protests. He was talking about the Dutch farmers when they really hit the roof was when one of the ministers talked about this program not being optional. So again, bear with the details. It's all in the episode, but they had said 700 farmers here, we're giving you an offer. We need you to go. Just go away. Who cares if you have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 generations and you planned on continuing forever? Here's your offer. Go away. And then they're like, yeah, no, we're good. Some wanted to take it, right? Because they're ready to retire. Great offer. A lot of them are like, yeah, no. And then a minister is like, well, if you guys aren't going to do it, we're going to force you. What kind of world do we live in? Right?
Yeah.
We don't live in dictatorship countries. Right. So anyways, those are important things that we need to be aware of. And am I saying it's going to happen here? No, no, I hope not. I sure as heck no, hope not. But there is no harm in looking around the world and going, what's going on? What are the common threads and what may be coming here? And how do we prepare ourselves and be aware so that all of a sudden this is not upon us before we even have a chance to react? Right.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah. So what other things did you, okay. What policy. Other topics?
Policy and regulation. And I know you've covered this a bunch, Chrissy, and a lot of people will be like, well, that doesn't even apply, but ESGs and greenhouse gas emission tracking, net zero, this is something being talked about and it's open. I mean, in corporations and in governments. And I think it's really sped up and there's a lot of chatter and action on this now. I was actually at a food conference in Winnipeg and they were talking about this. And little did I realize how far ahead these regulations and strategies were. And I think they're a ways away from affecting farmers because I was sitting there and I was surprised that they were mentioning big companies. It's going to obviously hit the big companies, right? Like Mercedes-Benz. They were saying that all these big companies are starting to record their carbon footprint, all of these different metrics. And here's the thing, Mercedes-Benz. I know it's not agriculture, but prime example, it started outside of agriculture. They're being required to report on all these things. So that's now their standard operating procedure as a company. So then the next step was all their suppliers that they bought parts from now had to show their reporting, their government, their environmental reporting. So if it gets to that point, and they don't provide their reporting, they cannot be a supplier of Mercedes-Benz. And touching on agriculture, because it was a food and beverage conference, they were saying that there is, and it's openly talked about, not so much in mainstream media, but it was right there at the conference. And there was lenders from different banks talking about financing being tied to your environmental report. So what does this mean? Is this coming to farmers? They stood up at the front of the room. Unfortunately, there is no farmers in the entire conference other than me, because it's the food and beverage industry. It hasn't made it to farmers, but they said farmers and food companies should start preparing their reports, because it's going to come. So not my words, their words. Even farmers can expect one day when they sit down to get land, loan for their land, that they're going to be asked for their ESG report, whatever that looks like. These are just things I'm learning. Am I saying they're coming? No, I can't say they're coming, but they're already being talked about. And the weird part is it's not on the awareness level of most farmers. I was sitting in this room, 400, 500 people. Farmers are the primary producers. None of those people have food or beverage without us. There's conversations going on about our industry without any of us being there. I was actually floored. So it's interesting. And I mean, it's not conspiracy. It's out there. It's the biggest companies. And I'm not going to start naming them. They're the biggest companies. And some of them are in the food and beverage space. And they're already long committed and working on this. Am I saying it's a bad thing? We'll leave that to the future to tell. These are things coming, right? How is that going to impact farmers?
Yeah. And I was sitting with a grower last month, cabbage, watermelon, pumpkin, Christmas tree grower in the Northeast. And he told me about how he has to report because he supplies Walmart.
Oh, already?
Wow. And so he already has to report his diversity and his climate goals and that. So he already has to satisfy their goals. How many growers supply Walmart? Lowe's, Home Depot. Right. So it is already affecting farmers here in the U.S. anyway. And I wouldn't be surprised to me. And yeah, there's so many different angles, right, that you don't really think about. But those big companies are distributing food. Farmers grow food. So it just makes sense that it's moving backwards. Right.
I was actually shocked when I showed up at these one or two conferences to see how far the discussion had got. How quickly pre-pandemic to the end of pandemic, the focus had changed. When they were having a lot of these meetings in the industry, it was advocating. How do we reach the consumer? Post-pandemic, 2023, I show up and they're talking about ESG reporting, farmers being the polluters. I was actually floored. I didn't realize it was that far gone though, Chrissy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Moving fast, but that's why we have to use our voices, right? The 2%.
Right. And I mean, to be aware, because to be honest, as farmers, we are busy working the land, taking care of the animals, doing our thing. That's 10 jobs in one every single day. It's stressful. It's overwhelming. If mainstream media is not covering it, how do you find this stuff out? I like to think I am fairly in the know. I actually just about fell off my chair to realize how far this conversation was when I showed up at two of these meetings back in 2023. I was floored. So farmers that aren't paying attention of this, how do they know? Is it a bad thing? Well, again, I'm not going to sit here and give opinions. This is what I have learned from going to events, interviewing these guests. How can we as farmers be prepared and be aware to make sure we take care of our operation, our land rights, and represent ourselves, right?
That's it. So what about land rights? What have you learned there?
How did you know that was next, Chrissy? You don't even have my list. So policy, regulation, land and water rights. So Margaret Byfield came on and she is the Stewards of Liberty. Oh, I'm getting the name wrong, but that is her organization. And she works for farmer property rights in the U.S. Wealth of information. And she did an episode with us talking about the 30 by 30 land grab and then the 50 by 50 land grab. And a lot of people will be like, oh my God, that's conspiracy. But it's really not. It's not that the government's showing up to grab your land. That's not like that. And I think people think that when they hear land grab, it's just that the government has a goal to take back land, to rewild the animals, to put land back into nature. And that was a great episode, opened my eyes up to the 30 by 30 land agenda in the U.S. Canada has a quiet one as well. It was 25 by 25. I actually found a link to the government website. And let's forget about North America, because it's pretty quiet. We don't know much about what's going on here. The issues going on in the Netherlands with the Dutch farmers, this is the environmental agenda, the same one that the government in the US, Canada, and around the world, they're all committed to bringing land back to its natural state and water as well. So if we look to the Dutch farmers and the government saying, we need 700 of you to leave, that is part of that movement. And I think, don't quote me on this, I think it's called the Natura 2000 movement out there. Okay. Don't quote me on that. Great episode, Margaret Byfield, on my website. I know you've interviewed her as well, Chrissy. These are the experts. They are doing this day in and day out and really making sure that government is not encroaching too much onto our land rights as renters of government property and as landowners ourselves. Yeah. That is the land and water rights. And again, it's right around the world. It's every country has their goal to do this. It's part of the environmental movement, climate change, taking care of Mother Earth. My concern and why I brought it to our audience is the biggest landowners other than the government are farmers. So how do we make sure that land that we're renting, we get to continue to rent it, and land that we own, making sure that we are taking care of our rights in all things that we do?
Yeah. So the question that always leads somebody who asks questions to is why? Why is it that the powers that be are putting all of this pressure on food that everybody needs? Well, have you gotten close to that answer?
Well, a lot of people would guess the answer on that. You know, I'm not going to guess. I'm not at those tables. I don't know why they're doing this. I don't know why they think that taking land out of production for agriculture that feeds a growing population, there's people that'll argue that, but if we say it's a growing world population and they want to take land out of production, it doesn't quite make sense. Who's deciding this? Who are the goals? Why? Is it a good idea? Is there science behind it? That I won't even begin to try and guess, Chrissy. That is above my pay scale.
Yeah. We just have to keep asking questions, right?
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd give me an answer. You know, I'm trying to get there.
Aren't we all? And, you know, again, to me, the nature is important. And I started it out, and I'll probably end it that way again. But there is a big green movement being pushed again. There's been a few times in the last, I'd say, 20, 30 years where it's come up with a really big green push that seems to be on the forefront again, and climate, the environmental movement. So my concern is, as this is happening and farmers are being the best stewards of the land possible, how are those two goals working in tandem? Farmer rights, land rights, renter rights, and the environmental movement. How's that going to work together? So that's really why I wanted to bring a lot of these guests on to share their piece so that we could be aware.
Yeah, I love it. So what is your advice to the North American producer then?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, Chrissy, there's so much of this, and it's so small. And I think there's, I hate this expression. It's probably not the best one. To me, when you look at a farmer right now, with everything that's going on, taxes increasing, commodity prices tanking at this point for several commodities, fluctuation in our inputs. A few more of my concerns on here are urbanization and land ownership, transfer and sale. There's so many things here that are higher level up front in your face concerns than the government wanting to renature land. So what's my advice? You know what? Let's just look at Europe and see what's going on. Ask some questions. Why are they doing this? The European, was it the German government cut the taxes and savings on vehicle and tractor, like farm machinery you save on your insurance. They cut that. Then they cut on the farm fuel savings because they have a massive deficit in their budget. 17, 18 million, I do believe Bill said. So, okay, we see what's going on with the Dutch farmers and them being pushed off their land. We see governments that are deeply in the hole, trying desperately to plug the sinking ship financially, right? And when they look at the subsidies or savings, whatever word you want to use, that they give farmers, they realize, oh, if we stop letting the farmers save on their fuel and their insurance, that fills a pretty big part of the hole that we have in the budget. So you look at North America and Canada, I mean, it's not political. Look at the budget. Where do we stand financially as countries? Let's hope that our countries and our governments are not going to start to do stuff like that, right? Because costs are high. Commodities are variable. Like the costs have gone up. Our land is at the ultimate highs and interest rates. So if all of a sudden any of the governments take a card from the Dutch government or the German government, that could have a huge financial impact on farmers. So what's my advice? I mean, again, there's so many day-to-day concerns that are bigger and more in your face and more urgent than a lot of these distant concerns out there that that's Dutch farmers, that's German farmers. That doesn't affect us. But you know, to me, there's a quote about the ultimate sign of wisdom is reading everything, taking everything in and being aware, right?
Right.
Is being aware going to help us? We don't know, but at least we know what's happened in other countries. And if it's going to start here, you kind of might know how things will go, right?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Great answer. So I have one last question for you. And I stole it from you.
Oh.
What's your favorite book and why?
Oh, my goodness. I didn't even prep for this. I didn't even know. We didn't even discuss questions. What is my favorite book? Oh, my goodness. I have so many.
I know. We talk about a lot of books when we're together.
Yeah. So my classics, my origin into business and working on my mindset and being the best leader that I can be, best business person I can be, would be a lot of money mindset books. There's The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles was one of my first. Think and Grow Rich is a great one and classic about money mindset and building and chasing your dreams. My goodness, there's my three classics here. And then there's like about 10 here that are like in my bookshelf, like these are the gold. And then I have like, I'd say hundreds of other books that have helped me along the way. But I'd say that's my answer.
Yes, very good. And I haven't read a couple of those. So I'm going to have to get some of those ones for sure.
Oldies and goldies.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Tracy. keep going. I'm so proud of you and your show, and you've been my hero for a long time. When I met you, you just started the podcast, and I'm just so impressed at how well you've done. And yeah, you'll have to come for a visit too again.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chrissy. I really appreciate
it. And thanks
that.
To all who are watching or listening. If you want to learn more, Tracy's links will be in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to North American Egg Spotlight on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Listen Notes. If you prefer video, you can find us on Rumble or Telegram channels or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you liked the episode, I would love it if you shared it. Have a great day. Thanks so much for listening to today's Egg Spotlight episode, where we put the spotlight on people and companies doing great things for the agricultural industry. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcasting platform, and give us a 5-star review. You can also follow us on YouTube and Rumble to see the video version of Ag Spotlight. Also, head on over to northamericanag.com to subscribe to our Industry Connect update newsletter. If you're interested in advertising opportunities, email us at connect@northamericanag.com. Thanks for listening. Fastline Auctions, the ultimate destination for online farm equipment auctions. Looking to list equipment? Fastline Auctions knows farmers, and farmers have trusted Fastline for their equipment needs for over 45 years. With unmatched digital reach and direct-to-farmer catalogs, they can find the right buyer for your equipment. Not to mention, they have the industry's lowest commission rates. And if you're looking for equipment to buy, you can bid with confidence. No buyer premiums, no reserves, just integrity. Fastline Auctions, your trusted platform for hassle-free, cost-effective farm equipment auctions. Visit fastline.com for more information. You can join us for a tour of the Fastline Auctions platform July 13th at 6:30 p.m. To register for this webinar, go to northamericanag.com/fastline-webinar. That's northamericanag.com/fastline-webinar to register now.